This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was 6. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom and Mine, where we dive into all aspects of perinatal mental health and wellness related to pregnancy, birth, loss, postpartum, and new parenthood. It's so much more than postpartum depression. We raise the volume on all of these topics in the hopes that someday everyone will have the support and info that they deserve before they need it. Please note this podcast is not a replacement for treatment by a professional or professional training. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. We're going to be touching on a really important topic today, which is hyperemesis gravidarum. For those of you who have had this, you know exactly what it is. And for those of you who haven't, you may have heard of morning sickness. Well, this is not that. Hyperemesis is a very severe form of what is commonly known as morning sickness, but essentially it's a medical condition in which people are nauseous all day and vomiting multiple times a day, resulting in any number of physical and emotional repercussions. And today we're going to hear a personal story from Lauren Harris, who is a married mother of three living in Western Massachusetts. She is a licensed mental health counselor and the owner of Center for Perinatal Wellness. She is also the Western Massachusetts Regional Coordinator for Postpartum Support International. She is coming on to share her story of HG through three separate pregnancies. We're going to be able to hear in detail how through the first pregnancy, she learned about this condition and was dealing with it for a very long time. And she also dealt with postpartum anxiety. She's going to be sharing how both of these experiences impacted her and her pregnancies and postpartum experiences, as well as contributed to her specializing in the field of perinatal mental health. So let's hear from Lauren. Welcome, Lauren. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Kat.
Oh, sure. I'm really grateful that you're coming on to share your story through three experiences with HG. I think this is a condition that, you know, as you know very well, that not a lot of people talk about, and there's not quite enough resources out there yet. So I think you sharing your experience and how it's shaped you professionally is really going to help a lot of people. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah. So please do start wherever you'd like with your story.
Okay. So I became pregnant my first pregnancy. I was 22. I had graduated with my bachelor's degree in psychology just a week prior when I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, Natalie, who is now 13. And it was a surprise. We weren't trying at the time.
Yeah.
And while my then fiance, now husband, and I were excited and happy, we were also really scared. And we had just moved into our first apartment like a few months earlier.
Wow.
And around week 7 or 8, I want to say, so it was pretty early on, I began feeling incredibly nauseous. And, you know, my mother, my mother-in-law, other women around me told me that that was normal. It was just morning sickness. But I was vomiting a lot.
Oh, that so early was, on.
That early on, yeah. Multiple times a day, I was getting sick. From the moment my feet hit the floor, I mean, so right in the very beginning, around, you know, that 7, 8, 9 week, it was more nausea than it was vomiting, but the vomiting was happening. And then things progress. And my OBGYN at the time, at first, also had, you know, I called the triage line and they had reassured me, this is normal, this is normal. But then my mother actually ended up calling, and I don't remember how many weeks I was at that point, just because I was unable to keep any food down, any liquids down, and my energy level was just so low. And at that point, they had recommended that I go to the emergency room for expecting moms at a local hospital. And so I did that and received a few bags of fluid after being diagnosed with dehydration. But it, interestingly enough, it wasn't until the end of my pregnancy that I ever heard the word hyperemesis.
Really?
Yeah. No one said anything to me about that. I just kept thinking and talking about this when I was talking to people about it as really bad morning sickness or morning sickness on steroids is how I would kind of refer to it. And it just lasted. It just kept going. It did persist through the entire pregnancy. And so I ended up having to go into that hospital 4 times for IV fluids.
Wow.
I had lost 40 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
In the first, definitely under 20 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, it was definitely before the anatomy scan that I had lost that much weight. And I was really frustrated. My mother was very frustrated that it didn't seem like anyone was taking this very seriously. And just to put it in context, I wasn't overweight. I wasn't terribly overweight. So I'm 5'6", and I weighed 100, at the time I weighed like 190, 95 pounds. Mm-hmm. And then when I lost the 40 pounds later, but it was so much weight in such a short period of time. And that was really what was concerning. And of course, you know, during that time, basically being, there were days where I was unable to get out of bed, just unable to stand. And I have this vivid memory early in pregnancy. So when I say early in pregnancy, I mean before the anatomy scan, before that 20 week mark. I have this vivid memory of my husband on one side of me and my mother on the other, and they lifted me out of bed so that I could go take a shower. So that they could, clean me, you know, just to help me take a cool shower, because I just didn't have, the energy. I was so dizzy when I stood up. I wasn't able to keep anything down. It was really, really a nightmare.
Yeah. That is so intense.
Yeah.
So it sounds like everybody up until then was telling you this is normal stuff. And what does that do to you to hear that this is normal?
Well, I hate to even say this out loud because my love for my daughter is so incredibly strong, and I can't imagine our lives without her. But in those early times, I just kept thinking to myself, there's no way this is normal. There's no way that people would do this on purpose.
Right.
And my mother and I had a conversation about terminating the pregnancy because it just, I needed people to help me go into the bathroom.
Right.
I mean, so all of this to say, I hope it's assumed I had to stop working as well.
Right. Of course.
I couldn't work. So at the time I was the title was therapeutic services advocate. So I was essentially an activities, you know, therapeutic activities person at an inpatient psychiatric unit.
Okay, right.
So my job was pretty...
So
my job was relatively physical. Granted, calling out bingo numbers isn't all that physical, but... or doing arts and crafts or painting, you know, it's
But you have to have energy. You have to have your wits about you. Yeah. You have to be, you know, engaged.
Right. Right. And at that time, I just didn't.
Right.
I couldn't. I mean, I wasn't eating.
Right.
And not on purpose. I wanted to eat.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult. And so additionally, an additional stressor during that time, I was technically a part-time employee. So at the facility, so I didn't have sick time or vacation days or any paid time off whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so being unable to work put a huge financial strain on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was really stressful. And I didn't know how long that was going to go on. And my supervisor at the time was a woman who had never heard of this, like so many people.
Right.
And actually, I didn't have the vocabulary because no one had educated me with what this was called.
Right.
So when I was calling out of work saying I have morning sickness, she became pretty intolerant of that. Well, other women don't have it like this.
Yeah. Oh, no.
She had a baby last year and she was able to come into work every day, you know, while she was in early pregnancy.
Gosh, did that happen a lot? People kind of discounting the severity? Oh, I imagined it would. Yeah.
Until I eventually went back to work I think it was my third trip to that emergency room for expectant moms, when someone finally prescribed me Zofran, which at the time, circa 2006, early 2000, well, not, I guess mid 2006, use for hyperemesis was an off-label use. And someone had told me, I think it was someone from the insurance company. Actually, they told my mother because I wasn't making any phone calls. Mm. The insurance wasn't paying for the Zofran because using it to treat hyperemesis gravidarum was an off-label use. And at that time, it was only approved for chemotherapy patients to help combat their nausea. And so thank God, you know, I think my lucky stars that my parents are in a financial position where they're comfortable and they were able to pay out of pocket the $90-something dollars per pill. Because I needed three a day.
Oh my goodness.
Just to get me through. And then around sometime after 20 weeks, I was able to go back down on that and just took one every day.
Mm. Oh, but still, I mean, you're still having the same level of difficulty. Were you still having the same level of difficulty? You just needed less?
After the 20-week mark, I was vomiting less than 5 times a day. Before that mark, it was more.
Oh my gosh. Can I ask a question about what else that is doing to your body? I mean, you're physically exhausted. I'm assuming you have pain in other ways too from this constant.
Yeah. I remember my whole body aching. And just not feeling like I had any energy at all. And I remember counting one time how many times I actually was vomiting in a day. And my record was 12 times a day.
Oh my gosh.
And that I just like, that's not dry heaving. That was something.
Yeah.
Something exiting.
Oh my gosh. That's like every hour?
Probably. Yeah. It just, you know, it came on, you know, you just do it because you don't have a choice. I didn't have a choice.
Right.
It just happened.
Right.
Yeah. And really, as my pregnancy progressed and the Zofran was in my system, I wasn't vomiting quite so often. And I don't remember when it started to ease up. It was somewhere in the 30s, the 30 weeks or 35 or 37 or whatever. That's when I started to vomit only once or twice a day.
Oh my gosh. Well,
it's hard to remember. Hard to remember the nausea. The nausea just felt like, oh, this is my life now.
Mm.
This is how I feel. Nauseous just all constant. The time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking
it. So this reduction, it was a relief, but
it was.
I mean, in comparison, I can't imagine how much of a relief that is, but you're still dealing with it.
Yes. Yeah. So Natalie was actually 10 days past her, she was born 10 days past her due date.
Oh.
And I remember throwing up the morning I went in for her induction.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, and I don't remember when it really switched, like from just being totally consumed physically by this nausea and vomiting,
mm-hmm.
and just waking up in the morning, throwing up, brushing my teeth, and going about my day.
It was just that normal of a part of your day.
It was that normal, even at 41 weeks.
Wow. Wow. So this whole time, did you stay home, stay off of work?
No. I reduced my hours. And so I was working maybe 2 days a week,
mm-hmm.
maybe 2 to 3 days a week. And when I went back to work, my supervisor, who had become intolerant of my calling out because of morning sickness, once she physically saw me and saw that I had lost 40 pounds between that moment and the last time she saw me, which was a couple of weeks, she took it serious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She said, oh my gosh, I guess you were sick.
Yeah.
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 Still am, but I'm here. And so they allowed me to really have a pretty sedentary job at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I did some data entry.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was up on the units, I was sitting.
You were, you were what? When you were up on
the units? I was sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I wasn't doing many behavioral interventions.
Right.
Certainly when residents became a little aggressive, I was not to be involved in any of that. So they did make some accommodations for me, which was the only possible way that I could have worked at all.
Wow. So really not that many. You said one person mentioned HG or said that this was HG to you. Out of all of the people you'd been around, nobody really knew what this was?
They may have known, but no one said anything to me that I recall.
Mm-hmm.
That I recall. Yeah. But when I was going into the hospital, I was so sick that it's very likely someone could have said something to me. And I just was, I didn't have my wits about me.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that moment.
Right. How can you think when you haven't been able to eat or drink anything and keep it in? Right.
Right. I wasn't doing a whole lot of my own advocating or speaking or history giving at that point. It was whoever, it was either my then fiance, now husband, who was bringing me, or my mom.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm making an assumption and thinking that this is, once you're going through something like this, it's just all consuming. This is the thing you're dealing with. There isn't a whole lot else going on. If you can recall, what was happening to you emotionally, just to get through this and to keep going, how did you manage that?
So in times where I was upright and moving around and, you know, back to work and things like that, I was on Zofran. And I was so scared that I was harming my baby by taking this medicine. But if I didn't take the medicine, I had to be horizontal. I had to be laying down. I was non-functional at all. No cooking, no cleaning, no caring for myself, really.
Yeah.
You know, thinking back to that memory of my mother and my husband carrying me into the bathroom to shower.
Yeah.
So it was between, I felt very stuck between a rock and a hard place, which of course creates guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And so much anxiety because, you know, after we had made the decision, yes, we are definitely going through with this pregnancy. We are definitely having this little baby. She is a product of our love and she deserves to be here. This is the right choice for us. You know, we were all in.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have much of a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take this medicine, but it was so scary.
Yeah.
And additionally, I had worries about, you know, so is she going to be healthy? But also, am I going to be healthy at the back end? What if this doesn't go away when she's here? How am I going to care for her?
Right.
What if this is just my life now? What if I just stop throwing up?
Yeah. Wow. Right. Because at that point, it's so part of your everyday that I imagine it would be hard to see your life without it. Although I'm sure you hoped for it every day too.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. And of course, those worries about, you know, what if I never stop throwing up? What if I never stop feeling nauseous? They really came before I reach the point of, you know, get up in the morning, throw up, brush my teeth, move on with my day.
Right.
But it was really scary. And what kind of damage is this doing to my muscle, my esophagus? Is she, because I'm unable to eat, because I'm unable to keep liquids down, is she going to be, you know, malnourished? Is she going to be harmed in some way just because I'm unable to take good care of myself nutritionally?
Wow. So by the time you got to birth, you said induction 10 days after the due date, so to speak. Were those worries present for you during birth? Like, is she gonna, you know, be okay?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How could they not be?
I was really scared that there would be some surprise.
Right.
I mean, after all, the pregnancy in and of itself was a surprise. The hyperemesis was a surprise.
Yeah.
So I was worried that, oh my gosh, what if she has some condition not compatible with life? What if she, what if they miss something? What if I can't do this?
Sure.
Right? Like, this is only the start of it. Now I have to take care of this little person.
So you're going, I'm assuming then you're going into birth exhausted also.
Yeah, a little bit. I remember just being so excited that I'm not going to be pregnant anymore.
Right.
Thank God. Huge belly I've been carrying around. You know, thank God. Like, I'm so done with pregnancy.
Yeah.
I was excited for that.
Sure.
So I remember being happy to go have her. But also you know, also worried.
Yeah, right. It's I'm sure a mixed bag. I mean, how could it not be?
Yeah, right. And I think that's so normal, right? Mm-hmm. For any first time mom, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Excitement and worry.
Sure.
And nervousness, right?
Yeah, going totally.
Into the first delivery.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of the HG part of your story, so she came out, mm-hmm. and was she okay? And how did you feel physically?
So it was a 23-hour induction, which I know for first-time births and inductions, that's pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, okay, that wasn't so bad. In all actuality, after she was born, I was like, that wasn't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had to compare the two, hyperemesis and giving birth, I would give birth all day long.
Right, right. There's a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So all of her Apgar scores were fantastic. She was 8 pounds, 11 ounces, pink, cried right away, was a good nurser, loved the skin to skin. Just, she was perfect.
Wow. That's great.
Totally
what a relief.
Yeah. I hemorrhaged, but I didn't actually know that I hemorrhaged until I was pregnant with my second child, because the doctor who delivered me did a DNC right away, right there after the birth.
Okay. Can you please, as many of us are probably trying to wrap our heads around this, explain a little bit about what happened?
Sure. So I pushed for 20 minutes, which, woohoo, great, mm-hmm. right?
This is birth number one?
Birth number one.
Okay.
Birth number one. Yep. So I had been laboring all night, mm-hmm. and somewhere in the middle of the night decided to get an epidural.
Uh-huh.
After the epidural took place, I was able to get a little bit of sleep. So I got maybe 3 or 4 hours. And then just before 9 a.m, a nurse came in to check on me. And all I remember her saying is, oh, you're ready to go. And so she walked out of the room and my doctor and she came back in and they said, all right, when we say so, push. So I pushed for just about 20 minutes and Natalie was born. And I knew that there would be blood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My husband knew that there would be blood. I was so focused on my daughter that had just been born, who was placed on me,
mm-hmm.
and then taken away to be washed and swaddled and observed and all of that. My complete attention, complete, absolutely 100% attention was on her.
Sure, right.
And I had no idea what was going on south of the border.
Mm-hmm.
No idea whatsoever. And frankly, I didn't care. I didn't care. It wasn't something that mattered to me at that mm-hmm. moment.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you know, I had the epidural, which I felt nothing from the waist down, absolutely nothing. And it wasn't until a prenatal visit while I was pregnant with my second child that doctor who had delivered my first child said to me, I hope I didn't traumatize you with the DNC. I said, the what now?
Right.
The what?
Uh-huh.
And then she read to me from my chart explaining that I had hemorrhaged and she had recognized it, but because the epidural was still working so well that she did what she had to do right then and there. And she explained to me that she did that. She made that decision because otherwise I would have had to been put under general anesthesia. They would have had to prep an OR. I would have been separated from my baby. And she decided in that moment, albeit without consent, that it would be less traumatic for me if she just did it then.
Okay.
Because I guess the placenta didn't come out
Got it.
The way it was supposed to or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just, that's, I mean, you've already been through a lot, enough for sure. And that's just, wow, that's a lot. Okay. So sorry, you found that out when you were pregnant with the second?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know what a normal birth looked like.
Sure.
I didn't
know
what it was supposed to be that much blood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was 22.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I was just letting them do what they needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But
I'm not quite as good as the patient at this point in my life.
Oh, by good patient, whatever do you mean? I mean, not asking questions and being complicit and doing what they tell. Yeah. Yeah. Good. I'm glad you're not a good patient anymore. Mm-hmm. Yes. Great.
So an altar releases. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you can't come to our practice and like cross stuff out. Like, well, it just did.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So by the time your second pregnancy rolled around, were you feeling nauseous again?
I was. So similar to the first, nausea and vomiting showed back up like an old friend somewhere between that 6 and 9 week time frame. And I know that's probably a huge time frame. I just don't quite remember exactly mm-hmm. when.
Was this a planned pregnancy or a surprise?
This was a very, very planned pregnancy. We were trying to get pregnant for about a year and a half when we finally did.
Mm-hmm.
So that was super exciting.
Yeah.
Yes. My kids are 4 years and 10 months apart.
Mm.
So 4 years. It took us 4 years.
Mm.
It didn't take us 4 years to get pregnant.
In your path to the second pregnancy, were you deterred in any way by your previous experience with HG or other things?
Yes. So I had always thought that I wanted my children pretty close together in age, actually. And then after my experience with HG and postpartum anxiety, that changed things. I needed the time for my mind and my body to really heal. You know, plus we had a lot going on. We got married, we bought a house, I finished mm-hmm. graduate school, started yeah. and finished graduate school.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, you were busy.
We were busy, yeah. And so it wasn't until Natalie was, I think, 3 and a half is when we decided, okay, now we can start trying. Three and a half, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can start trying. And it took us 18 months from that point to get pregnant. And so our kids are just about 5 years apart in age.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got pregnant with our second child, Mason, just like an old friend, Hyperemesis gravidarum, showed up to congratulate me. Yeah. And I was thankfully well-versed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It was in my medical record that this was something that I had dealt with. And so I was met with so much more support
from
my medical team. Yes.
Great.
They were like, here's the Zofran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 5 years later in 2011, I believe some things had changed on the insurance side of things. And so I did not have to pay out of pocket for this prescription anymore. I just had to pay whatever the copays were. Yeah.
Wow.
So just overall, such a smooth transition. I think I only needed fluids once throughout that pregnancy. And then in my third pregnancy, same thing, early pregnancy, hyperemesis shows up like an old friend to congratulate me. Again, hey, doc. This is what I'm dealing with. Okay, here's the Zofran. And by that point, you know, while the nausea and vomiting were still happening, because I had a good, you know, my medical providers had this reported, this was part of my experience. I was self-employed with my third pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I was able to give myself the liberties I needed for rest, for hydration, for keeping my feet up. Mm-hmm. That, yeah.
So the second two,
it was a start.
Yeah. With the second two pregnancies, did you still have vomiting every day, even with the Zofran, or was it?
Yep. With my second pregnancy, I threw up every day until 37 weeks.
Hmm.
And with my third pregnancy, I threw up every day until 33 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it got much better.
Yes, it's all relative.
When you compare it to
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
It's all relative.
Absolutely.
You know, and comparing once a day to 12 times a day.
Yeah.
Or even five, it was easy breezy.
Right, right. Yeah.
That sounds crazy to say out loud.
Right.
But it is. I mean, it's relative. That's the perspective I have. Like, once a day, no problem. Got it in the bag.
Sure. I mean, if your only experience is what you've experienced, then yeah, everything is relative to that. No doubt. There's that does sound a whole lot easier than 12 times a day. And you have support and you have medication early on. And, you know, it sounds like the amount of stressors was much lower, you know, just in terms of like financial stuff and insurance and all of that. So there's so many factors. That is a lot.
So many factors. Right.
So with the anxiety that you mentioned, postpartum anxiety, was that, I mean, maybe if you can walk us through what that was like for you after your first, and then if it showed up for your second and third also?
Yes. So unfortunately for me, I also struggled with postpartum anxiety with all three pregnancies. And, you know, per typical, I guess, my anxiety became worse with each subsequent pregnancy.
Hmm.
So with my first, with my daughter, I was worried that something awful was going to happen to her, that I wasn't good enough, that I would make a mistake, that I would walk in, you know, I would find her in her bassinet or her crib, just like not breathing. Those were my fears.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, I didn't feel safe carrying her downstairs. Mm-hmm. So I avoided it at all costs. I didn't feel capable to give her a bath. Mm-hmm. And so my mother or my husband did it. And that was pretty much the extent of it with Natalie. But the fears around the stairs and the bath continued with my other two pregnancies as well, with Mason and Owen as well.
During pregnancy and also... both during pregnancy and postpartum, the anxiety was present?
More so postpartum than during the pregnancies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, when I reflect on my postpartum period, I am drawn towards my third and final pregnancy with Owen, my five-year-old. He's five now, because the intrusive thoughts were so real.
Mm.
So, I mean, of course, right? Isn't that redundant?
They're terrible.
So scary. And with him, it was the only pregnancy where I had nightmares about him. Yeah. So by the time that I gave birth to Owen, I was convinced that somewhere, sometime before the age of three, he would be taken from us some way. And of course, that I mean, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is this part of the content of the nightmares?
It was exactly what the nightmares were. Mm-hmm. The nightmares were all different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would leave him in a hot car. I would turn my back while he was in the bath. I would like to get a towel or to get soap. Like I would just turn my back for a second and he would slip under the water and then that would be it. Or I would fall down the stairs. I mean, all of the scenarios that you can imagine, these were my nightmares.
Yeah.
And so when he was born, it just carried over.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I had been successfully raising two other children, I was convinced that we were going to lose him some way, somehow. And it was just so scary.
Of course. So the nightmares sounded like they were pretty consistent and regular.
Mm-hmm. They were.
Right. So it's hard to escape from them.
Yeah. I can't recall, you know, how often I was having them. I don't believe they were as often as once a week. But even when they weren't happening, I was still aware that I had this belief.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
Yeah, that's kind of like ever present, but in the back of your mind kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the front.
Yeah. Sometimes in the front.
Yeah.
Right. More so in the front after he was born.
Oh, okay. Right.
Because it was, when it was a dream and I would wake up, I could, you know, pacify myself. Oh, God, what a terrible dream. What a terrible dream. Thank God it was just a dream. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, as your HG kind of got a little better in each pregnancy, the anxiety got worse in each postpartum. This is quite a journey to be on for off and on for years. I mean, the amount of resilience that it takes to cope through all of this is quite a lot. So how did you cope? And what got you through this?
Yeah. So following each birth, I was in therapy. And that's how I cope.
Sure.
The therapist I had was absolutely amazing. Taught me some really amazing skills. We did some EMDR.
Great.
Which, of course, if people don't know what that is, eye movement, reprocessing, and desensitization. It was so incredibly helpful to have her there to talk these things out, to have her really point out in a gentle way the flaws in my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed that. And it wasn't until after my third birth that I chose to also go the route of therapy and medication combined.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, the combination of an SSRI, antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication with psychotherapy, that helped absolutely tremendously.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's great. I mean, that is like a life raft for a lot of people, both of those things, both medication and therapy. And certainly in combination, they can do a lot. So I'm really glad you got some relief. And support and understanding. And because, I mean, these feelings are so challenging, just physically and mentally and emotionally, but they're also very isolating, you know, because nobody else is really going through it. They're watching you go through it. And it's hard. It's hard to, you know, have this intensity of physical symptoms and emotional symptoms and to keep going. And you did. You absolutely did. So that's amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah. So is this by chance, all of your experience, part of what propelled you into perinatal mental health work?
How did you know?
I don't know. I don't know. Just a wild guess. Just a...
Yes. So it absolutely is. So while it really was a combination. So I knew counseling was what I loved to do. It was my chosen profession. Mm-hmm. And so it is my chosen profession. I'm not retired. And I knew that the challenges I had with hyperemesis, you know, it has a name. So that means I'm not the only person on earth who's ever experienced this.
Right, right.
And the anxiety, antenatal and postnatal, they have names. So I'm not the only person.
Yeah.
And there weren't any specialized resources that I knew of. And I live in Massachusetts, and I think our state, our Commonwealth, has a pretty good reputation of caring for its citizens, for having safety nets for people, and pretty good resources for families. But I couldn't find any specific to perinatal mental health. Mm. Actually, I didn't even have that language.
Sure.
I just knew that I was super anxious, sometimes sad, and I had just had a couple of babies. Yeah. So... who's going to help me? And it really did. But I knew I was definitely, like, because I had struggled with it, I was attracted to that transition of life.
Sure.
And so I sought out trainings to do that. One of which was the Postpartum Support International Components of Care, which kind of cracked things open for me. I had taken other maternal mental health trainings, but there was just so much information in that particular one mm-hmm. that I felt like I need more of this.
Yeah.
Everybody needs more. Yeah. Of this.
Totally. Totally.
Yes. So my personal experience fueled my passion for working with this population.
Yeah. And here you are. You have over these years, not only were you like getting help and support and healing, but you're building this beautiful practice that you now have. And how many clinicians do you have? And
so there's three of us who are full-time, but we are expanding currently.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The need is so great. It's so big.
That's, you know, I knew that there was a need in our community when I decided to open the practice. I was in private practice before opening the group practice. And of course, the difference really, I mean, the hesitation I think for a lot of people is, you know, the recredentialing mm-hmm. with insurance panels.
Yeah.
Because that's always a fun ride.
Always.
Always. So that took a lot of work. But now that we're here and we've had our doors open as a limited liability corporation since 2018, so we're toddlers now. Our name is out there in the community, and, you know, pediatricians, primary care physicians, OBGYN practices, midwives. We have a statewide resource called MCPAP for Moms. You know, they all refer to us because I think there's one other practice in the state that specializes solely on perinatal and maternal mental health.
Really? The whole state? Wow. Yeah. In terms of a group practice. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's out of Mass General Hospital, which is in Boston, which mm-hmm. is about an hour and a half, hour and 45, 3 hours if you hit traffic, away from where we are in Western mm-hmm. Mass. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we really, you know, we pull from, you know, our client base is really basically anything Worcester West, which, if you're familiar with Massachusetts, is basically the midline of the state.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So there's still a massive need, which is why you're expanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And one thing about, you know, now with the pandemic, we're 100% telehealth, is I'm finding people aren't hesitating to reach out.
Right.
You know, we're normally, you know, we're getting calls from people who are an hour away, mm-hmm. which normally, you know, people in Massachusetts don't typically like driving too far.
Yeah.
We're such a tiny state. We're not really part of our cultural.
Yeah.
So those aren't people that we normally would hear from, but the telehealth has really opened things up.
That's great. I do. Yeah. I mean, if there is some sort of silver lining, it is to all of this pandemic madness. There is that. I see that too. Just people are more in need and also more willing to reach out for help because that barrier just isn't there in the same way of time and distance. And really, like in a lot of places, it's your only option to do telehealth.
Exactly.
And it just so turns out that it's also a lot easier for people who are pregnant and not feeling well and have a newborn than it is to load themselves and whoever else up in a car and go somewhere.
Exactly.
So with all that you've been through, and I'm sure a lot of people who are hearing this can resonate on some level or maybe have more questions, but what were some of the things that you learned about these conditions and learned about yourself and things you want people to know?
Yeah. So I learned that hyperemesis gravidarum is a thing, mm-hmm. first and foremost, mm-hmm. and that it isn't just really bad morning sickness.
Yeah.
Right. It's so much more than that. It is an all-consuming experience that sometimes you have to kind of fight for people to believe you.
Yeah.
Until they see it firsthand for themselves, right? Because then there's like no denying. What I learned about myself is that I am strong and resilient.
Yeah.
And I can push through some things that I did not. I would have never thought that I could have done. I learned a lot about our healthcare system.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Right. I did. I learned a lot about our healthcare system because it was the first time in my life anyone had told me, no, you can't take that medication because I'm a healthy person. Mm-hmm. I had always been a healthy person. And so, you know, growing up, you get the occasional like strep throat or ear infection or broken finger. Mm-hmm. And it's always just like, okay, well, you go to the doctor and you get it fixed and you pay your copay and that's
right. Right.
No big deal. And so to have an insurance company turn around and say, yeah, no. At a time in my life where I was in the most need I had ever been in my entire life. I was absolutely the most vulnerable I had been in my entire life. And I was carrying another human.
Right.
Felt so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But the silver lining is that it does end, right? The hyperemesis goes away. It ends.
Yeah.
I learned to advocate for myself, especially with the second two pregnancies.
Sure, yeah.
Partially because the hyperemesis wasn't quite so bad as it was with the first. And also, like I had mentioned, this was, you know, the hyperemesis was recorded in my chart, so I didn't have to fight. But I asked a lot of questions. I encouraged my doctors to take their time with me.
Oh, I love how you said that. Encourage you to take your time with me, Dr. So-and-so.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes. Everyone, go encourage.
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know that my HMO pays for 15 minutes, so don't you dare walk out this door at 7:30.
Oof.
What?
Yeah.
Like drop. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you all my questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good for you.
I mean, I do understand. These are very busy people and
of course.
Sure they're very lovely and have lots of other cases. Yeah. Self-advocacy is something I learned.
Yeah.
And to advocate for my little ones, right? We always talk about mama bear. And I think that comes easier, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, reaching out for our children.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier than reaching out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I really learned who my network of support was. Mm-hmm. And I was able to prepare for that in the second and third pregnancies, right? I knew that my mom had my back. I knew my mother-in-law had my back. I knew my husband was standing by, which, God, I just – thank my lucky stars for all of these people that I had a really solid foundation.
Sure. I mean, you really do need your physically incapacitated and emotionally depleted and just literally depleted.
Literally depleted.
Yeah, you do need and deserve help and support. It's a lot to go through.
Right. You need 4 bags of fluids. Oh, I guess I was depleted.
Right. That's quite a journey. And I'm grateful that you're sharing this because I think for a lot of people who deal with HG, it's hard to conceptualize and think about a second pregnancy or a third or that, you know, to go through it again. And if they want to, certainly you don't have to if you don't want to. But for people who want to have a second pregnancy, you know, it's a lot to wade through. And what's so interesting about the process is just like you were saying, if somebody had told you that this was going to be how it was, you wouldn't be able to imagine that you could get through it. But when you're in it, you get through it. You do the thing for the most part. If you have adequate support, if you have support, that changes a lot of things. So certainly life context matters and support systems matter and all of that. But it's hard to imagine the bigness of dealing with something like this. But really, when you're in it, you're doing day to day, and you did you got through it 3 times, and now you're helping other people who might be going through it, which is just fantastic. And we need so many people in the profession because it's more normal than people know.
Right, and you know, as I speak to people now about it, so many times their response to me is, oh, isn't that the thing that Kate Middleton had, or isn't that the thing that Amy Schumer had? And I was like, I had it first.
Yeah, you started it.
Excuse me, I'm the one that made it cool.
right.
Totally kidding.
Yeah, of course. But it is so helpful that, you know, for celebrities who are dealing with it, that they talk openly about it.
Oh my gosh. I felt validated.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. As if my own experience wasn't validating enough, right? To prove it to myself that it was a real thing I went through.
Right.
To hear of other people, you know, talking about it. And of course, Amy Schumer is so just raw. She keeps it so real. Mm-hmm. I really felt validated with her, you know, her posting on Instagram about, you know, her experience and whatnot, because, oh, my heart just went out to her. I saw her, you know, online and was just like, oh God, I remember that.
Yeah,
it's just really tough.
Right. It's really tough. Well, you know, hearing stories like your stories and hers and all of the people who are going through it and talking about it really is helpful for the people who are at home. And I mean, I can even say clients of mine and people that I've supported that don't hear stories from other people. It's invaluable that you came on and shared this with us today. And I just thank you so much for taking the time to do that.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on, for doing this podcast,
sure.
Breaking down these stigmas and misconceptions about mental health and perinatal mental health and all things related. It's just so important. I'm glad that we're living in this time where we're able to push it forward. And thank you for doing that.
Aw, thanks. It's my favorite. All right. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you again, Lauren, for sharing this with us. It is really, really important that we know about these potential conditions that could affect us or the people that we love. If you know someone who is dealing with hyperemesis gravidarum, please do share this with them. It's so important because, as we were talking about, any number of conditions can be very isolating during pregnancy and postpartum. And it's so powerful to know that you're not alone. You're not the only one. And that it's okay to advocate for yourself. It's okay to seek out resources and help that's going to help. And again, really, really important to know that this is not quote unquote, just morning sickness, which is bad enough, honestly. This is a very severe condition, hyperemesis, and we have to take it seriously and make sure people are really getting the treatment that they deserve. If this is your first time joining us on the Mom and Mind podcast, please go subscribe and you can hear every episode downloaded directly to you as it drops. Pick and choose what you want to listen to. Pick and choose what you want to share. I know that there's at least one episode in our 180 something or other that will resonate with you or somebody that you know and love. Come join us on Facebook at Mom and Mind Podcast or on Instagram at Mom and Mind. And thank you for joining us today. Until next time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.